On Tuesday, First Rand gave us a trading update for the 6 months to the end of December. So obviously we aren't there yet. And it's very useful for shareholders to get these kind of updates because it kind of bridges the period between when the last results were released in September and the next set of numbers, which are only in March. So we've got 4 to 5 months. Mary Velikazi, the chief executive of First Rand, will tell us exactly. But it gives you a very useful insight into what South Africa's premier banking group is up to. Mary, I say that premier banking group, and I know the guys at Standard Bank are going to be concerned or upset at that. But the reality is there's a piece that we published from the Financial Times of London this week, and they spoke about this being a good time to buy quality stocks around the world. And would you believe they also included First Rand as one of those quality stocks, and was only a handful of them. So I guess the international guys really know you and presumably visit you quite often.
Thanks for having me, Alec. Look, we read the article as well, and we said we hope it persuades a few more foreigners to come back to our shores to buy our stocks. And certainly good to see that First Rand is amongst the quality stocks listed globally. So yeah, so I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding. We're looking for those bulk sales back into our stocks because I think there's a lot of value in South African stocks at the moment.
Yeah, and let's just, before we go into the detail, let's just start off with that trading update. If you consider that you are looking at pretty strong earnings, you say high teens on the one hand, and then return on equity between 18 and 20%, which by a global comparison, those are juicy numbers. And it isn't like the First Rand shares are overpriced by any stretch of the imagination. Just explain where that bounce came from, or where that uptick for the 6 months came from. Is it because of the well-documented stuff happening in the UK that you didn't have to make yet another provision for it? Or is it conditions getting better?
So, Alec, I'd have to say that obviously this is the earnings guidance that we were updating the market was really to say that the guidance we gave in September, we remain on track for that. And that's to deliver normalized earnings in the mid-teens. But now remember, for the second 6 months, the base would have been lower because we took that additional provision of about 3 billion. So, you know, if you exclude the fact that we actually had in the earnings base, the 3 billion, we probably are talking lower double digit earnings growth, excluding provisions. Now, we haven't ruled out that, you know, any further provisions because we are waiting for the FCA to finalize their consultation paper. So, you know, touch wood, we can get to the end of this process in the UK. But I mean, it is actually a legal process that's unfolding. So, yeah, so I guess to just make sure that from a shareholder perspective, they are following the actual operational performance in the business. I mean, I think, you know, the update we gave around the core operational performance is still strong outside of these UK provisions that we would be setting aside. And I think from an ROE point of view, as you say, that even globally, when you look at banks across different jurisdictions, you know, return on equity in the 20s is not, I think it is quite difficult to come by. But yeah, I mean, I think we think in our portfolio that a number of things we can get right to ensure that we stay at the top end of the range. In the forecast horizon, yeah, we've got a few things up our sleeves.
But it is interesting that South African banks are delivering far better returns on equity than most banks around the world. And I suppose we got a good insight of that when Investec reported and they showed the UK operation ROE was half of that of the South African one. Why is that so? Why is South Africa so much better place to do business if you're a bank?
Look, I think particularly when we look at the SA economy at the moment, I mean, at the moment, we are feeling quite constructive around the opportunities that are going to present themselves. So, you know, I guess the environment that we are in, we've seen the latest GDP print. It was the fourth conservative uplift, actually, I think in GDP growth. We're moving from a very low base. So I guess, Alec, but we take comfort in the fact that we're moving in the right direction. We are starting to see credit extension lifting. And this time around, it's actually driven by corporates and you know, medium-sized businesses. Remember in the past, whenever we saw a credit cycle, it would be consumer-led, which is not really what South Africa needs. So that being led by corporates and commercial, we think that's a constructive cycle. The structural economic reforms should again continue to provide corporates really with an opportunity of doing more. I think Transnet is already showing what can happen. You know, the fact that we're getting locomotives that will be refurbished in Rosslyn, as announced yesterday. I mean, those are the kind of things from a fixed investment point of view that the economy requires. So on the back of structural economic reforms, we think there's more that can come here, that it's obviously good for medium-sized and small businesses in time to come. So, yeah, so we are hoping to capture and I think really facilitate quite a lot of productive capital formation on the back of the structural economic reforms and businesses that see opportunity and want to borrow money to invest in the economy. So we're quite constructive about that. And then from a household point of view, you know, the lowering of the inflation target in a few years' time will be highly beneficial to households because rates will also come down and I think to allow for more lending. And we know that there is a big backlog, I really think, when it comes to housing. There's a lot of reforms as well targeted at the lower end of households and income households. And I think if we clear the title deed backlog, that's another place where people have access to balance sheets. A lower inflation environment and a lower rates environment, it starts setting the retail credit cycle into motion, I think, in a really positive way, 2 to 3 years out from now. And then I think if you sit back and say, okay, from a credit point of view, because obviously that's not the thing that's a big differentiator in the different markets. If the cycles are right, I think South Africa in the past, we've been able to capture also quite a lot of non-interest revenue. And in a few markets, you know, there's a lot of regulation around the non-interest revenue. So if you look at the shape of the fees that we earn for various activities, so that sometimes is quite different. I mean, I think you perhaps don't want to be in transactional banking in some of the jurisdictions because it's regulated. So our regulators, I think to bring down the overall level of fees and to create competition, they have not gone the route of regulating fees and having people to, you know, having to do that. They've actually introduced a lot of competition in the market. So I think every week we've been reading about new entrants into the banking sector, whether it's insurers or retailers coming into here or fintechs coming to just play in a particular stream of the financial services pool. So Alec, what that forces the incumbents who in the past used to operate, I think, in a market where competition was fairly limited, is that it forces us to be innovative. It forces us as well to modernize, our offerings, our customer propositions. And it also forces us to make sure that we are efficient, because that is also something that we can, you know, in response, do when there is a high level of competition. So I think it's a healthy market. I wouldn't say that, the returns we are getting from the systems are excessive, but I really think it's a healthy, vibrant market versus one where regulators are involved in pricing decisions. So, yeah, so I think that's why it's probably attractive for the likes of Revolut to come and look and want to set up shop here. And, yeah, we look at all these competitors coming into our space and think, okay, we clearly are going to have to be on our toes a lot more. But we think when the economy grows, remember, there is actually opportunities for various people, various players in the market. And that's why it's important to make sure that we carry on with the positive momentum that's in the country to get to a place where GDP growth is higher, because then you've got space for, I guess, increased, vibrant banking and insurance activities in the country.
Robertson, a small town in the middle of nowhere where a wine farmer claims to have sold a Volkswagen up to e-bike cars.
A farmer. What car did you really sell them?
A VW.
Right here in Robertson.
Small town, but we know about WeBuy cars.
Yeah, but what's a farmer doing with a VW up?
It was just a runaround.
Cool cover story. And I see you traded it in for this, like a double cab Danay. Were they all out of ranges?
WeBuy cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
It all comes back to that, doesn't it? That if we grow as an economy, then there's more space for everybody. And just about every difficulty we have in South Africa is related to GDP. But you said something very interesting in the outset of that that part of the discussion when you said that South African corporates and medium-sized companies are starting to believe, I guess, if I'm interpreting you correctly, that the reforms are happening. And are you seeing that they are now confident enough to actually start spending some of that trillion rand, which is apparently on South African balance sheets, in cash rather?
Yes, Alec, not fast enough, but we have to look at signs of an improvement. So the RMB and BR confidence survey that was released yesterday indicated that there's actually been quite a meaningful shift in business confidence. And that, I think we've had a series of a few quarters where that's gone backwards. So to just have turned the corner on sentiment and business confidence is going to be really quite meaningful. And actually, if you look per sector, you know, and you look at manufacturing, some of the improvement in the basis points is like, it's really meaningful. It's, you know, up 5 basis points, up to 7 basis points in some of the specific sectors. Because, you know, obviously the recovery in our economy is not even. It's not the same across the board. So those, I think, are important green shoots. Because it was during this period now when you thought, okay, now we've got an S&P upgrade, a double upgrade, if you think about the fact that our outlook is positive. We've got inflation contained. We've got rates coming down. We can see activity. The big thing we need is for business to feel confident that I think they're going to have, you know, policy certainty. And I really think that the structural economic reforms, what Transnet, the big steps Transnet has done, you know, what's happening on the energy side is providing that policy certainty. And then I suppose you business people will look if the opportunities are attractive, that's when they will deploy capital. But where we are seeing actually improvement, and I guess that's really maybe where our thesis around it's going to come, it's starting to come through, is we're seeing a replacement in machinery. We're seeing businesses, existing businesses, buy new equipment in response to replacement cycle. Because when they're unsure, then they sit and they wait and sweat what they have until they're sure. So that's I think that's encouraging. And we think there is more that can come. And I mean, government, the most important, the critical piece that's urgent is to get our cities working. If you got Johannesburg to work, if we got the municipalities to provide the service delivery, you know, people have certainty on electricity and water, you know, that is going to result in another meaningful shift in business confidence. So, and that's how you unlock some of the deposits that are sitting on the corporate balance sheet, because they certainly have an opportunity, they have enough resources to be able to invest and to loan against if they want it. So yeah, so Alec, it does feel that we are on the cusp of, I think, of something that if maintained, we really can see, like, I think, meaningful shifts in the economy.
It's so heartening because you have a unique insight into what's going on at FirstRand through F&B, through RMB, through your various operations to how business is actually doing, not the narratives, but how it's actually doing. And then this morning, though, we're getting more of these political issues. Today, the Secretary of State in America had another broadside attack on South Africa. How much attention do you pay to these political statements, which at the moment seem to be really consuming the narrative?
Yeah, so Alec, these headlines are unfortunately unhelpful. But we do, as South Africans, have to look at the actual relations outside of the political narratives that South Africa has with US and with US businesses and US technocrats in government. And there, by and large, you know, I think the relationships are solid. They haven't been affected by this political wind. Of course, we don't have a trade agreement at the moment, but you can see the SA businesses that used to be reliant on the UK favorable tariffs, that they are making a plan in the meantime. So outside of the political, exchanges, and I think moments that really we could do without, I'd really think we look at the data and, you know, we look at the strength of the relationships. If you listen to the Department of International Relations, the people that do the background work are probably not as demoralized as the headlines imply. So I almost think that, you know, we need to, just like in South Africa, you can decide to spend most of your time anchored on what's unfolding in the Madlanga Commission and get very depressed about how broken the system is. You know, is it challenging, broken? Absolutely. Or you can also decide to look at places where I think we are making progress as well as a country. And I think it is that choice sometimes with the headlines when they come around, okay, but where is the actual friction? So, I mean, from a financial services point of view, you know, we are working well with some of the development finance institutions based in the UK, in the US. There's no disruption when it comes to that. You know, the facilitation of payments, access to IT. So there are a lot of things that are actually working where we need to ensure the relationships are constructive and they remain to be constructive. And a lot of US businesses that are based in SA are, you know, very supportive of ensuring that those relationships become strengthened. You would have seen that as part of the B20 work streams, you know, American companies participated, you know, and were here for the handover. So my guidance is always just, and I think to our teams, is just to say, okay, you know, just look under the hood, stay calm. From a narrative and a headlines point of view, it's going to be, you can't actually afford to respond. And I think to allow yourself to want to respond to each and every headline, because it's there for a reason. We have to make sure that we are focusing on strengthening the working relationships that are really critical to make sure that we, yeah, I think we continue building on what we've had in the US, and hopefully things don't escalate, Alec, because I think that's, you know, that part is the one that's really unhelpful. But there's a lot to, yeah, there's a lot to work and build on already, I think, you know, key partnerships where both Americans and South Africans want to see that go forward.
Now, often when you're in the business world, you know that you've got to look beyond the talk and onto the numbers. And that's why it is invaluable to get that feedback from you on the way that you are reading the whole political issues that can demoralize people. You're absolutely right, in addition to the stuff that we're getting hit with every day. But generally speaking, when you now go to bed at night and you think about tomorrow, what are the non-bank competitors? Because we've seen Capitec coming in into business banking, for instance. We've seen Discovery coming into the premium individual banking area. So those are strongholds for FirstRand. And now Revolut, as you mentioned earlier, coming into South Africa to shake up things, no doubt, also as a digital bank. What is keeping you awake at night, if anything, on the way that this environment's shifting?
I think, Alec, we don't have room to be complacent. So that's the first one. You know, so, you know, what I listen to and engage with the F&B teams and the RMB teams is being alert and ensuring that they understand what our customer needs are. Because you remember, actually, it's where our strength is that we've got strong customer franchises. And so when our customers, if you just take business banking, for instance, on the SME side, if they're getting loans from fintechs, or they're not getting loans from us, but we can see that they're paying somebody else, we have to look and say, what did we miss? Did they come to us? Why did they go somewhere else? So So, you know, we have to really be on our toes to ensure that we are understanding what our customer requirements are, and then that we are quick to come up with value propositions that are still relevant to our customers. So, yeah, so we have, it means that we have to study what our competitors are up to, and particularly where our own customer franchise is, because it is a big, I mean, we're still growing our customers, the number of customers, we are still getting new relationships. So there's still something that we are doing right. But the key for me is maintaining, making sure that our propositions and how we look after customers and service and support them keeps evolving, and I think keeps being relevant to them. So one of the places as well, that in one of the areas where we've actually had strong growth has been in the informal economy. I think everybody's been talking about this resilient informal economy. Now, those are those are opportunities that I think banks, it probably took us a long time to go into those markets. Having said that, I mean, I think we've been a business that's focused in the informal economy, has been operating probably for the last 8 years or so, and really becoming deeply entrenched. And the needs of those customers are actually very different to what a traditional business that sets up shop in Parktown traditionally requires. So, yeah, so we have to just work a bit harder, but I think in there are also opportunities. So as I said, it's not just a defense game, but really making sure that we understand our customers' requirements, our clients' needs. We understand who's going to be a winner in the cycle that we are in, and how do we support better those businesses. You know, I think it's what's going to keep us in the game. But it is very competitive. But I think I would not go to sleep well if I thought that our leadership teams and our business executives were complacent. So fortunately, they're not. There's enough hunger, and I think there's enough focus being paid to our customer franchises.
And back to the issue that you have been dealing with in the UK, we saw from Nedbank recently that they've got a new CEO, I suppose similar to yourself and your position at First Rand, who said, hang on, that's not my problem. It's somebody else's problem with that state capture deal that was done with the Guptas and Transnet and so on. Here's 600 million Transnet. We're walking away from it. We're not accepting any liability, but I've got bigger things to deal with. Has that ever been a temptation for you that you are spending so much of the executive time on what's going on in the UK?
So, Alec, we're not there yet, because at the moment what we have is a draft consultation paper of a redress in the UK. This is a legal process that unfortunately is very long. The one decision that I don't regret is us challenging all the cases that ended up being heard in the Supreme Court of Appeal. Because if that Court of Appeal judgment had not been challenged, okay, the amounts that we are up to, we would have had to consider paying back if we didn't win that fiduciary duty aspect of the arguments, the amounts would have been sizable. Okay, so already I think the Supreme Court of Appeal, having defended it there, probably halved our potential exposure. So the amounts are really, really meaningful. And as you can see, I mean, even the industry required that legal clarity from the Supreme Court. Now, what the FCA, and I think we've made this point to them, has an opportunity of doing is defining what is consumer harm. How do we arrive at it? Like, it should surely be in the rate that the actual customer paid. And, you know, so that's really where I think it's important. So it's not so you're not really being accused of doing something and therefore there is a settlement that is coming up. These are areas that require clarification in terms of, yeah, so one was the legal interpretation around our responsibilities. So once the fiduciary duty is out of the way, I think that lowered the bar. The next piece is that, okay, can we align on what consumer harm is? Because if some aspects of the redress scheme stands at the moment, in some instances, you will refund customers to such an extent that they would have probably paid no interest on the loan that they used to borrow their cars. Okay, which you understand that there's no, that would never have been a commercial arrangement. So Yeah, so Alec, unfortunately, we're not in the space yet where you can say, okay, this, you take your medicine, because, yeah, how do you price the current business going forward? You know, how do you think about operating in the market? What capital is then left? Because you certainly can't also employ, you can't deploy capital in a market where there's no limitation on liability. So, yeah, so I think we're still a bit far from that. But, I mean, we'll always be pragmatic, but we have to protect our stakeholder interest here. And I guess, Alec, the key piece as well is that you have to look at the response of the other lenders as well, you know, Lloyds, and what their approach has been. So when there's a proportionate scheme, I really think that we can get our heads around. None of us are going to want to get to the place whereby you are right, because I think it's difficult to win in these kind of instances. But we cannot also have an outcome that is disproportionate, and it doesn't make sense when you're also going to the practical aspects of it. And I think from a consumption of time and a leadership point of view, I'd obviously just say, you know, I think there's a number of us where this takes up time, but I mean, the bulk of the business is immunized. Even the subsidiary in the UK, I mean, they put their head down. If you look at the growth that's coming out from there, they're growing, they're finding niches, they're focusing on the business, and they're leaving this legal process, you know, to a number of legal experts. We've got a very good legal firm and legal counsel looking at these matters. So, you know, I think ours is. So if you see it as a legal process whereby we are sourced and make sure we've got top people supporting it. Because the rest of the business, I think we're still paying enough attention to it. We're still paying enough attention to make sure we are growing, identifying opportunities for the group. So at this point in time, I think RMB's strap line of why not both? I guess we have to do both in this instance. We have to defend, I think, our shareholder rights here. And then we also have to just make sure that the regulators understand the long-term implications of where we land on this redress scheme. But we continue to be very focused on our existing portfolio and businesses in South Africa and on the rest of the continent.
Has it made you gun-shy, though, for the UK? Because it seems to be a very difficult place to do business if you've got the regulators stepping in. It's not the first time they've fined financial institutions for perceived breaking the law or not looking after the consumers well enough in their perception. Has it made you think maybe we shouldn't be putting more money in there? We shouldn't be doing more acquisitions?
So, I mean, we've made it quite clear that if we end up with a redress scheme that is not proportionate, like, firstly, you don't have more resources to deploy because they fail to meet the business case and the hurdles that we require from the business. So that's not a difficult one to make a call on. But we've received an audience, actually, Alec. I think when we've raised the different issues around the regulatory uncertainty, particularly coming from the conduct regulator, because it's one also can't brush the entire regulatory authority system. The prudential regulations are quite certain. You know, we are prepared around when is it that things are changing. So there is still quite a lot of certainty there. I think it's a lot of the surprises, I think, have come from other avenues. And I think that, unfortunately, does not make, I think, the UK environment appear stable and attractive for long-term capital. But we've received, as I said, that we've received an audience for that. So let's see what comes out from the final consultation paper, and let's see where this thing lands. It's again, you know, in the middle of a storm, that's not a good time because you actually don't really know what lies on the other hand, on the other side. So, yeah, we just have to put our heads down, call towels around our heads, and just, I think keep making the arguments, keep engaging like we've done, and hope that at some stage sanity prevails. And then we can then, I think, have a moment of assessing what the regulatory landscape has changed and what it looks like we do for all our jurisdictions and for all our businesses.
And when you do look into the other parts of our continent here, you have been quoted as saying you want to get more involved, but not at any price, not at any cost. Now, we've seen a rush into East Africa Are you even looking at that at the moment, or is it just too expensive, or the regulatory authorities just not firm enough for you to go there?
No, so we would very much, I think, like to have a presence in East Africa, and I think Kenya as a base is particularly attractive. But I like deal flow, and I think, you know, good deal flow is difficult to come across. And when it does come, like we've seen in Standard Chartered, you know, you get all the South African banks also that are there, and you get the local banks that also want to participate. So also quite a competitive space. You know, if the regulator woke up in Kenya and said, okay, no, we're issuing some greenfields licenses, we'll probably be there and at the top of the queue. So, but in the absence of that, we continue to keep looking. There is a consolidation that we're expecting will take place that will hopefully create opportunities. But we had the same thought in Ghana and it never really happened. So, yeah. So let's see, Alec. I think in the meantime, we continue to find ways in which we can grow and partner in those regions as well, in the absence of having a license. And, you know, there are lots of other opportunities that we can also take advantage of and make sure we've got capabilities to support our clients in the rest of the continent. So the absence of an East Africa region presence, I always say to the RMB team, it's not the end of the world. It just does mean that you don't have a footprint in a key area. Okay. But we are not at scale in all the markets in which we are in already. So, you know, there's still things that we can actually do. And in some instances, we have to really think very differently around how we access growth. And sometimes it's by partnering, and you don't get the 100% share of the profit pool, but you are participating and able to be relevant to customers and clients. So, yeah, so we have to keep searching and making sure that we find in the right opportunities and the right angles of how we participate in the growth on the continent, which offers some very good long-term prospects for us as a group still.
And here in South Africa, for a bank, there's always this trade-off between credit and marketing. Marketing wants you to issue more loans. Credit says no. At the moment, your bad debt ratio would suggest that credit might be winning. And with interest rates cutting, are you going to loosen the taps a little?
You know, Alec, what we have done, I think we pulled back from the market only during COVID, okay, when there was a shock. And I think everybody did the same. And then maybe it took us a while to just say, is this just a bounce back or is this a proper recovery? And since then, since we came back into the market, we've been writing to appetite. And so we keep making the point that we would pull back because we could see that impairments are running away and household affordability is not there, particularly when rates were high, inflation was high, you know, then customer affordability was just not there. And then demand for home loans was also weak. You know, we saw what happened in Gauteng. I mean, the people moved to the Western Cape and I think houses in Johannesburg were not really a flavor of the month. So our not being at probably at a higher end of our through the cycle range has actually really rather been a function of demand for credits not being strong enough and household affordability. So with the improvement in household affordability, hopefully we start seeing a pickup. But yeah, our appetite and our capacity has remained unchanged. So, and obviously from on the business side, you know, I think that the policy certainty, the growth in the economy, new opportunities being created. Again, we'll see businesses come and hopefully get a loan to be able to invest further into some of their businesses. Yeah. So Alec, it's not a story of, there's a credit. I think credit is actually rather being more constructive than anything else. I think we've leaned in and still made loans in that lower end of small businesses, in this last cycle. I think advances grew 20% last year to small businesses in that informal economy. So I think we've been present. It's a matter of those small businesses having conviction in their own prospects that will allow them to actually loan more. So In summary, I would like to say that your appetite has remained the same. I think we recognize that how we've originated has provided us with capacity, to make sure that we continue being relevant to our clients. But yeah, I think it's a good credit outcome under the circumstances, given where we've come from with the high levels of impairments. So it's good to see a reprieve, because you know that provides further credit. But I think as a business, it's still as an organization, I think economists tell us where they think economic activity is going to be. And then credit checks them and says, okay, we think you are right. And then we go in looking for those customers. Yeah, less of a marketing story.
But if we pull it all together, it seems as though South Africa is on the right road. The reforms are starting to come through. We're talking about the South African economy, that is. And that you sound pretty optimistic about the direction that FirstRand is going, but FirstRand being such a big organization requires the economy to be doing that too. So when you talk to friends at dinner parties and they ask you, should I be investing? Should I be convincing my children not to go and live overseas and so on? How do you react to those very practical questions?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think FirstRand, we've been constructive around that direction of travel. Probably even pre-GNU last year. Because of the structural economic reforms, I mean, for us, it was important that you got a political outcome that would ensure that, okay, there is a commitment to having for a government that's committed to reforms. And I mean, this Operation Vulindlela was started a long time ago. It didn't just start last year. And so we could see that the trickle-down effects of that reform will be the catalyst, really, for South Africa's engine and growth. So, yeah, so we followed that, and then we would go on road shows to investors in the US, and they'd say, oh, but you've heard this before. How's the scoreboard doing? So we feel a bit relieved that at least now we can see some green shoots on the scoreboard. But we actually have generally been quite constructive around SA prospects over the last 18 to 24 months. So I mean, I think it is encouraging. I think it's been good to see a number of things come together. The sovereign rating coming off the grey list. I think the business confidence improvement, the GDP growth. So from here onwards, if you were constructive and just wondering and not negative, okay, so maybe you do move a bit into the positive side, but it has to be sustained. And we have to make sure that the pace of execution on these reforms, I think, from our business partnership with government, we have to make sure that we are keeping that tempo and ensuring that, we're moving as fast as possible. So, yeah, so positive, but I think there's still lots of work to be done. But certainly in a much different place than we were, Alec, I think, when we were not growing and a lot of trend lines were going in the right direction. So feeling very good that we're ending this year with, I think, South Africa, things looking a bit more promising.
And 2026, a better year than 2025, which was a better year than 2024, and so on. I guess as long as things are pointing in the right direction, we can all have a broader smile on our always smiling South African faces, no matter what it seems. Mary Vilakazi is the Chief Executive of FirstRand. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.